And so to a role model for humans as we continue to worry about not being Homo sapiens. Megan Fredrickson is a biologist at the University of Toronto, and she's studying ants, how they cooperate and how they manage forests, killing plants they don't like and keeping others that suit them, like tiny gardeners.
So this is an ant species, Myrmeliquista schumanni, which is quite common in the Western Amazon Basin, and it's very specific in terms of what species of tree it will nest in, and it's entirely arboreal. So it nests in the hollow, swollen stems of a tree species. And it has this amazing behavior where it goes out and attacks plants that are not its host species by injecting formic acid into its leaves and other tissues. And plants that try to establish within one of these ant colonies don't do very well. They get attacked usually very quickly and die very quickly. And this creates more space for its host trees to germinate and grow. And the ant colony then expands its nest into one of these new host trees that has occupied that space. And they're known in the Amazon, these areas which are dominated by this one tree species, as devil's gardens, because a local legend says that they're cultivated by the devil.
Well, one thing the devil does, presumably, is plan, have foresight, because if you plan something, you know that particular result's going to happen. You don't expect a tiny ant to know about that sort of thing. Does it have foresight?
Do ants have foresight? Well, I think that in this case, the colony has clearly been under selection for a behavior that favors future generations of ants within the same colony. The degree to which that's akin to what we think of foresight in humans is maybe not entirely clear, but it is effectively planning for the future.
What was it like working there in the jungle?
It's been a great experience. I think that more biologists should get interested in working in the Amazon. There's not as much research going on there as other parts of the world because of the conditions. We have very limited facilities at field stations. It's often not a whole lot of access to power, telephones or internet, but it's one of the places in the world where you get as close as possible to working in an environment that's pristine.
Plenty of ants there for you to study.
Yes, lots of different species. We don't actually know how many species of ants exactly are in the Amazon, but probably many hundreds or several thousand. And in fact, ants dominate the environment to an amazing degree. E.L. Wilson, one of the world's most famous ant biologist, has a cartoon that's very well known. It's a cartoon of an ant drawn four times the size of a jaguar. And the caption of the cartoon reads, "In the Amazon basin, ants are four times the biomass of all the terrestrial vertebrates put together."
All their weight together weighs more, four times more than all those other creatures.
That's what he says. I think that we don't actually know a lot about the biomass of ants in the Amazon. We haven't gone out and measured it very often, but there's certainly some evidence that ants outweigh a lot of things like jaguars and monkeys and iguanas and so on that we think of being important components of tropical forests.
Is that why you've got a gigantic ant painted on your wall?
Yes. I think that a lot of people would be surprised to find out just how exciting ants are to look at them when you can see them blown up in large size. So yes, we're in the process of having an ant mural painted on the wall with a very, very large ant queen. She is many, many times the size of what she would be in real life. But I encourage anyone who has never had the chance to look at an ant through a microscope to look at an ant blown up to larger than life size to appreciate the diversity of ants and all kinds of different cool morphological features of ants. They have cool spines on their backs. They have cool texturing on their backs. They have eyes on the tops of their heads in this case.
You're getting quite lyrical with joy at the wonder nature of ants. But in fact, you're studying their cooperation. Of course, many of them are in colonies, sometimes gigantic colonies. And of course, the evolution of the way they learn to work together for a common goal indicates most extraordinary success. What aspects have you been studying?
One of the main reasons that people study ants is because of an interest in how it is that they came to form these societies in which you'll have hundreds or thousands or even millions of workers cooperating for the common goal of rearing the offspring of their queen. But I've mostly worked on a different aspect of cooperation, and that is cooperation between ants and other species in their environment, particularly cooperation between ants and plants, but I've also started to work on cooperation between ants and microbes. And ants are amazingly cooperative in this respect as well. They form a lot of mutualisms, which are reciprocally beneficial interactions between species. And we usually think of mutualisms as being things like pollination, which ants actually don't do, or don't do very often. But ants are tremendously important in many ecosystems as species that defend plants against herbivores or that defend them against their competitors. And I'm very interested in both how these behaviors evolve and also the consequences of these behaviors for ecosystems. So how much of the ecology that we see in a tropical rainforest depends on the fact that there are species that cooperate with one another.
Yes, we think of nature as being a highly competitive thing, and you cull the weak, the inefficient, the ineffective. And the question is, how did this cooperation get to the sophisticated level that it does? As you say, ants cooperating with plants, it seems a most extraordinary thing to... How did that evolve, do you think?
Well, I think that the earliest ancestors of ants were predatory insects. They were insects that mostly ate other arthropods, and particularly they ate the herbivores of plants. And so I think that these interactions grew out of the fact that plants did better when ants were around because they ate a lot of the herbivores that would have otherwise eaten the plants. But it's gone much further than that because a huge number of plant species around the world, especially in tropical forests, but even outside the tropics, produce some specialized structures with which to attract ants. So they may produce these glands called extrafloral nectaries that produces a sugar-rich liquid which the ants eat. And then by having the ants eat this sugary liquid on the plants, they then also forage and hunt for insects on the plant, which is beneficial to the plant. And there are many species of plants that produce hollow swollen stems and other kinds of structures, hollow swollen thorns in particular, as nest sites for ants, so that the benefits of having ants around far outweigh the costs of feeding or housing them, and has led to these very persistent and intimate associations between ants and plants.
So the idea is that this gradually happened over squillions of years, that the plants which happened to produce something that was attractive to insects, rather like flowers produce nectar and attract bees, you get the benefit. But many people will be puzzled about how it happened in the first place. You know, how did they get on without those rewards? You know, how did you get to that higher level from such a small start?
Well, it's an excellent question. In the case of, for example, the nesting sites that some plants provide to ants, in many cases, these are hollow stems that may have evolved from, according to baby steps. So the plant may have had relatively soft tissue inside its stem, and the ants may have started to hollow it out in order to build a nest there. And then there was selection on the plant to produce even softer or even less of this tissue inside its stems because having the ants there resulted in this benefit from protection against herbivores. And over time, the plant, in fact, lost the soft tissue in its inner stems completely and even evolved particular entrance and exit holes for the ants or particular glands that feed the ants. So we definitely do think it happens in baby steps in the same way that we think about evolution by natural selection and all other contexts, that there was a mutation that produced a change that was favored in the environment, and the rest is history.
And the rest is history, as she said, except when plants or animals try to cheat by pretending to provide rewards when they actually don't. Something else Professor Megan Fredrickson is working on at the University of Toronto.